is Christopher Long, and you're listening to The Digital Dialogue, a podcast dedicated to cultivating the excellences of dialogue in a digital age. This is episode 19, in which I'm joined by Adriel Trott, Assistant Professor of Philosophy at the University of Texas Pan American. Adriel receives her PhD in philosophy from Villanova University in 2008 with a dissertation entitled The Challenge of Phusis, Reconciling Nature and Reason in Aristotle's Politics. Her areas of specialization are ancient Greek thought, social and political philosophy. Her work is informed by the continental and feminist traditions. She is also a longtime member of the Ancient Philosophy Society and another one of my interlocutors here on the Digital Dialogue from that group of scholars. She's come to the Digital Dialogue today to talk about the recent paper she delivered at SPEP entitled The Wrongs of Rights, The Ontopolitical Logic of Human Rights from Arendt to Badiou. So it's a great pleasure, Adriel, to welcome you to the Digital Dialogue.
Thanks, Chris. It's good to be here.
Thanks for being on. One point that I wanted to make before we begin is that we've started the Digital Dialogue page on Facebook, and we've got about 60 or so fans there. So we want to invite people listening to this to go to Facebook and join our, become a fan of the Digital Dialogue on Facebook. And Adriel has said that she would post something after this podcast is posted related to our discussion that will hopefully generate some dialogue over on the Facebook page. So I invite everyone to do that. So Adriel, would you talk a little bit about the structure of your paper and what you were sort of intending to do in this paper, which you gave about a week or so ago, 2 weeks now, I guess, at SPEP?
Certainly. I take up this project and this interest in Badiou from my broader concerns with what political life can look like such that it does not exclude those who need it most and those who tend to be unseen in political life. So I start off this framing the paper by considering the question and the problem, the dilemma, really, of human rights. So as Hannah Arendt and Jacques Rancière have both spoken of in the last, well, Rancière quite recently and Arendt about 50 years ago, mm-hmm. human rights presents a problem to us because it seems that those who need it most are precisely those who cannot achieve them. Mm-hmm. Because the logic of human rights is such that in order to be given these rights that are supposed to apply to the one who is just basically human, you need to already be recognized by a government. And so the problem of sovereignty rears its ugly head as it has become uglier. So in order to have the recognition of belonging, somebody has to recognize that there's something about you that makes you worth belonging.
Right.
And Badiou addresses this problem in a innovative and provocative way, though it takes a lot of work to get to the heart of it, by trying to think of the relationship of ontology to politics as a distinct one, and thinking ontology at the level of the multiple, an ontology as what is many. Mm-hmm. And so you become a one unified thing that can be recognized only by an operation of the state, only by a way of being unified so to become recognized, but that, in fact, you are always already belonging.
I see.
That every multiple is already belonging.
So let me ask you to clarify that point a little bit, or at least what I understood to be sort of the central problematic, which is within the context of Arendt's critique of human rights, which is nation-state-based, namely you have to be a member of a nation-state in order to be granted these rights, you're looking
right.
to Badiou as a way of rethinking the question of human rights that might undercut what you're calling the dilemma of human rights. And could you just say a word or two about that dilemma again? Because I think you started with that, but I didn't quite get it clear.
Right. So as Rancière articulates it, human rights then either apply to those who don't need them because they're already recognized by a government, mm-hmm. or they're needed by those who can't use them because they're not recognized by a government.
Right. And how does that relate to Arendt's position? Is this just a rearticulation of it, or?
That dilemma there, as said by Rancière, he thinks is the precise rearticulation of Arendt. Now, Arendt, as we know, thinks of this problem in terms of the human that is just human, what Agamben calls bare life, and the human that has become political, the human that has become a citizen. Mm-hmm. And it seems that the problem really of the latter half of the 20th century, politically as well as philosophically, is to try to think the gap between the human and the citizen, and to concern ourselves with how we have opened up a gap there such that some who ought to be citizens are left out. Mm-hmm.
But Arendt and Rancière agree about the dilemma of human rights. What you're drawing our attention to with regard to Arendt's thinking in terms of the distinction between zoe and bios, zoe being just the biological dimensions of life, and bios for Arendt being the kind of life in community with others as a citizen.
Right. And the supposition that there can be human life that precedes being with others, being concerned with our existence, being concerned with justice and the good, mm-hmm. supposes that there is this animal-like, merely living human that has to pass through something to become citizen. Right. And in that needing to pass through, obviously, as we've seen, many are left unaccounted for.
Right. So on your, I mean, the three figures that you deal with in this paper are Arendt, Rancière, and Badiou. And if I am understanding you correctly, Rancière is agreeing with Arendt about the dilemma of human rights. He's not agreeing with her, however, about the distinction between mere life and political life.
Well, I think that is a disputable point. I think Rancière wants to say that he's taking up and challenging her and thinks that that distinction is brought about precisely because she wants to define political life in terms of excluding the life of necessity. Mm-hmm. But that the way that Rancière takes up the question is to try to push that boundary back. And so not to say there isn't this distinction, but rather to say more should be included than are. Uh-huh. And so the commitment for Rancière is to equality, as I think it also is for Arendt, but it doesn't seem to in fact shift the logic.
Right. But ultimately he wants to be more inclusive, but he still wants to hold on to a difference between human political life versus, let's just say, the necessity is of biological life.
Well, I'm not sure he would say he still wants to hold on to that, but the way that he talks about the solution seems to suggest there are those who aren't included, who should be included, and there are those that we say that we include, but we don't in fact include. Right. So it does seem to be a matter of shifting boundaries. Yeah. Instead of, as Alain Badiou wants to articulate, a way that we can think of community as at its root being a universal.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I want to definitely go to that. But so the point about Rancière, then maybe this is more your point that I heard in the paper, is that Rancière doesn't go far enough on your terms. And that's why you're bringing in Badiou.
That's right.
Okay.
I think that Rancière helpfully articulates the problem for us.
Okay.
And I want to think of new ways to address it.
But his position, what is his position with regard to the Zoe Bios distinction? Is it that there still is a distinction, it's just where the line gets drawn is different, or is it that this distinction itself is problematic, which is what I think I understood you saying Badiou basically is going to say?
Rancière does critique Arendt for insisting on that separation, but it's not clear to me in his solution that he's necessarily negating that distinction.
I see. Okay. Okay. Fair enough. So let's focus then on what you really the crux of the paper, I think, which is looking to Badiou for a resource in thinking through this question of the dilemma of human rights, and then how do we think politics in a way that might not be bound to the vocabulary of human rights.
Right. Yeah. So there are two commitments that Badu has that I want to try to elaborate, and that I think by bringing together, we can think of a politics that addresses this problem. Mm-hmm. And the two points are that what is multiple. Mm-hmm. And secondly, that the world is one. And so in contrast to the notion that what is one and needs to show up as a certain kind of one in order to be recognized, and in contrast to the notion that there is a world of those who are included and the world of those who don't get included, mm-hmm. that by thinking together the idea that what is multiple, the difference is fundamental, the difference is what is, and not something where there are more or less degrees that make us more like one another, that we in the end perform our being together in the world, in one world.
Mm-hmm. So, but the world as one, or the one world, is in a certain sense a kind of given. That is to say, we all living and non-living, I guess, things belong to a world.
So this is where things get complicated. As you may know, in his recent book, Logics of Worlds, which he obviously is trying to draw attention to the fact that there's a plurality of worlds there. Mm-hmm. In that book, he's thinking about the appearance of things in worlds. And so you might say that that's his attempt at a phenomenology, a way that things appear in the world. And in Being an Event, which is what I focus on, mm-hmm. in this paper, but that is not at all in contradiction to what comes up in Logics of Worlds, there, the notion that the world is one is that there, in the world in which things are, there isn't any outside of that world. That's not to say that it's totalizing, which hopefully we'll get to shortly, about the ontological operation that makes multiples one, attempts to show itself to be totalizing in that world, and in that sense is actually, in fact, accomplishing the indiscernibility of certain parts of that world. Mm-hmm. But that the world of politics, the world in which we testify to what is indiscernible, is a world in which we are equally engaged and concerned and involved in the lives of those who we think like us and the lives of those who we think not like us. Mm-hmm. But that difference is irrelevant.
So maybe you could talk a little bit about how Badiou is understanding the distinction between ontology and politics.
Certainly. So Badiou begins by saying, look, we make a decision about what is and the way we are to think what is. And the history of philosophy, at least since Aristotle, maybe since Plato, has decided that the what is one. Now, we could trace this back to Parmenides, but Badiou's take on that, I think, doesn't make it so obvious which way Parmenides falls. Mm-hmm. So we can say then that if we decide, no, in fact, what is multiple, that the multiple, this givenness of difference and multiplicity goes all the way down, we say there is no one, but we do see the one presented in the world, and so we recognize that there is oneness. How does that oneness appear to us? Well, Badiou makes sense of this, as you know, through set theory, mm-hmm. where mathematics, Badiou thinks, helps us think about how to speak about, or helps us speak about what being qua being, what we can say about being, and thereby thinking through set theory, we can see how the multiple is a multiple of multiples that has an operation performed on them to make them count as one. So there's a unifying process whereby those things are presented mm-hmm. as one, mm-hmm. but still what is this multiple. And so there's all this talk about set theory and how that you, the multiple of the multiple is ultimately of nothing. But the point of this is to say that on the one side, we have the multiple that is what presents itself there in the situation is in fact one.
So the question of politics in some ways is rooted in how oneness is expressed and articulated. So that is to say, the appearance of something as a one is not just an ontological question, it is in fact already a political question.
Right, and in fact it's both at the same time there. So when Badu talks about the situation, the state of the situation, the state of the situation is just as much about the mathematical operation as it is about the way that the state, the historical political state, mm-hmm. works.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, I mean, this is, I mean, in some ways, the multiplicity sort of functions as a way of holding every appearance of a one open to being other than it is. Is that fair to say? Because the reason why I ask that is because you have that whole section on when you talk about the void in Baggio, and you talk about the question of singularity and excrescence, and I thought that was really an important passage where excrescence is that which is represented but which is not presented, so it's sort of. Mm-hmm. I imagine this as a kind of operation that happens on things that do not attend to the manner in which they present themselves. And then the singular, as you say, is that which is presented but not captured by representation. Actually, you don't say captured. That was my vocabulary. You said
right.
is presented but not represented. So I was thinking that is sort of the affirmation of that which does not, or the remainder that always is there in every appearance. So can you talk a little bit about that singular excrescence
right.
point?
Yeah, well, if your listeners will bear with me, I'll try to go into detail on how it is that we get to see the fundamental position of the void in making sense of the situation.
Great.
So if the multiple is what is given in a set, then the multiple is ultimately the multiple of nothing. So we can't say that there's something more primary, ontologically speaking, that the multiple gathers up, because then we would be back to the logic of the one, and obviously that would deny that the multiple was ontologically primary. Mm-hmm. So to speak of the multiple of nothing is to show that the void, that nothingness is what, in fact, founds the entire operation. So the situation is such that, literally, the situation is the attempt to operate on those multiples to make them consistent in relation to one another. So mathematically speaking, there is this nothingness that attempts to disrupt and to show its inconsistency, that in that literal sense of it is inconsisting, mm-hmm. that it's consisting but not counted. And the operation is attempting to make everything ordered. So in the situation, you have all of the elements counted in a certain way. Then, because there is this given unpresentable founding element that is the void, there must be another operation that makes that void not disruptive to the situation. Mm. And that second operation is what is called the state of the situation or the structure of the situation. And that is attempting to count not just the elements, but the subsets. So the subsets would be the part that all of the elements, so for each element, there's a part that they belong to. Mm-hmm. And so the state of the situation attempts to count the parts. And so, you know, we see this all the way back to Marx, that the state counts parts, not individuals, and that in counting the parts, it is this effort to control and recognize and to keep the individuals from being disruptive.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things, in just to pause there about this whole issue of set theory that I think is really quite potentially quite powerful from a political perspective is I see it, as you articulated, as an attempt to undercut a certain kind of a substantialist metaphysics where membership in a set requires a sharing of certain kinds of properties. Now, here what I hear you suggesting as well, you know, this membership in a set is in is a dynamic and insert process.
Right.
And so somebody can be members of multiple sets, something could be a member of multiple sets depending on, how it is brought together with other things.
Well, I think the point that's important there, Chris, is that it is this operation. It's not any property. It's not anything that some element has that makes it show up as being worthy of belonging. Right. It is just this matter of belonging. That it belongs leads to this counting.
Can you talk a little bit more about that process? I mean, obviously it's not a somebody, a mathematician making decisions about what to include and what not to include. Is that through the process of the expression of, how does that operate? Let me just not impose something on it, but just really ask it.
Yeah, so again, this is the effort of mathematics tries to think consistency, tries to think the relation of its elements and its part consistently. And the problem is that what grounds it, in fact, is what it can't represent. It's the fundamental unpresentable.
Okay, so now
what the void is.
Okay, that's the void. So how does that fit with the question of singularity on Badiou's point? Right. So for me, that what you just articulated is the singular. That is the singularity of everything. That it just doesn't go into unity without remainder. But
sure,
it seems like there's some complication here that I'm not. Okay.
This is the thing about Badiou. You have to do all of Badiou at once in order to do any part of Badiou.
Fair enough.
So
just jump in, huh?
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay, go for it.
And I think that what you're getting toward is this, the problem at the end. So this effort to perform and accomplish consistency requires this structure of that situates the count, that it's the count of the count. Mm-hmm. So if the situation is the count, then the state of the situation is the count of the count, whereby it's trying to keep things ordered so that which is unpresentable doesn't disrupt the count.
Right.
And what happens there is that exactly this excrescence, which is the overcount on the part of the state of the situation where there are more parts than elements, and the undercount on the part of the situation where not everything that is there is being counted.
You're sounding more and more like the 2000 election. But anyway, go ahead.
Right.
What's count, undercount,
Duke Keeks, Florida. Exactly. So
I didn't mean to derail you.
That?
Go ahead. Keep going to counting.
So, yes, counting. The event is what disrupts that. And the event is that is the disruption of the ontological operation. So if the ontological operation is on the level of trying to make consistent what is presented, then the event shows the founding unpresentable there that is also an element that is not counted.
Right.
And in that moment, then, you have the appearance of that which is not discernible, but there in the situation. And that's where Badiou thinks politics comes into it being what it is. So otherwise, you just have this sort of situational operation that politics is the activity and the working out of the recognition of what was not counted.
Okay, so let me see if I have this with regard to the relationship between politics and ontology, because when we had originally started talking about this, I was under the impression that we really had a kind of strong distinction between the two. But what I'm hearing, and maybe I'm wrong about this, is if we understand ontology as, in a sense, the attempt to give an account of being, that that already is, in a certain sense, political. It involves operations. Those operations are inherently political. And so the divorce between, or trying to insert a kind of divorce between ontology and politics is misguided. Is that fair, or?
Well, I think we need to be careful about what we mean when we say politics. So we don't mean politics in terms of, for Badu, politics does not mean the power positioning of the administrative governmental institutions. And it doesn't, so even as that goes in terms of ideology for Althusser or discipline practices for Foucault, Rancière actually, in his book Disagreement, makes this clear distinction between politics and police, where he thinks of police as all of that apparatus and politics as the point of contention about who counts, who is a part, and who is not.
But I mean, on the way I was trying to articulate it was not the police version of politics or conception of politics, but the conception of politics that says in every attempt to give an account, there is a certain politics at work. It's not about, you know, it's not necessarily about the ideology and policing, but it's about the question of how things can be articulated as unities, and that is always something that is up for grabs in some ways. Is that a wrong way to understand it?
I think that that...
The answer can be no. Yeah, that is wrong. I mean...
Well, for Badu, I think it's important that politics is performed at the level of the event where ontology is disrupted, because in that sense, politics attests to this universal belonging that the situation and the state of the situation cannot attest to, even in their claims to totality. So that politics then, Badu calls it a truth procedure, a way of acting out what is true that ontology can't account for. And so I think in that sense, Badu wouldn't say that that politics is at work in ontology in the way that we've been using the word politics, because he wants to reclaim the word politics to mean something otherwise.
Okay, but then is it, then does our distinction between Zoe and Bios come back to haunt even Badu at that level? That is to say, if you're going to make a distinction between ontology and politics in a robust way, wherever you draw that line, you may be drawing it way back in, even into this sort of the event of being itself. But holding that distinction even there, isn't that problematic?
Well, the pre-evental for Badu is not something like the world of necessity or the world of the household. It seems like it is more of the world of Rancière's police. So it's not to say that over there is Zoe and then we get Bios, that we already have these multiples that are appearing in the world and counted as one in the ontological situation, that we assume difference is what is fundamental, that happens there, we recognize that, and yet there's still this effort to control and suppress even that which can't be, that which can't appear there. But that's not, there's not a qualitative judgment about what that is as there is for Zoe. So if your question is, does a similar kind of, is there still a disruption where something more like Bios has to show up? I think that the event is trying to testify to what's already true in ontology or in the situation that the situation can't say.
Mm-hmm. So, but I mean, maybe the issue is an impoverished conception of Zoe on Arendt and Rancière's term, and maybe even in Badiou's language too, because if we have this very negative conception of biological life that's generally necessary, that we sort of have to put up with, you get the sense that sometimes with Arendt that this is, you're just putting up with this. This is something, you know, you got to do these things. It's, you know, it's too bad, but you got to do it. And it's what, now this is a caricature, obviously, because I do think there's probably a more generous reading of Arendt that says, the natural necessity is part of life. It's not necessarily something that you need to demean in the face of the political. So we might be able to rescue Arendt on some level in that regard. But I mean, I would like to really press the point about a much more robust conception of Zoe or natural necessity, in which it would not be divorceable for humans, really, from the political. I mean, you know, obviously, you've done significant work on Aristotle and the question of phusis and the relationship between phusis and the polis, to know and that's really what I'm thinking. That's sort of the line I'm sort of taking, which is okay. The politics is something natural for humans, and but what we need is a robust conception of nature. We don't want a conception of nature that is mechanistic and reductive and all of these things, right? So that's what I worry about.
So that's really helpful. So yeah, as you know, right, I am also somebody who works deeply in Aristotelian political theory. So
turn you back to.
Can't get away from it. Yeah, so I think. For Aristotle, in my understanding of Aristotle, by calling the human being the political animal who has logos, Aristotle both puts the human within the natural world and says at the same time that there isn't ever a mere animal human. And I think Badiou makes the same point expressly in his Ethics, mm-hmm. when he says there is no just animal, that is reducing the human to the position of victim, that where the human appeals to just human rights, you're saying that you only are appealing at the level of animal being. And I think I have the same commitment in Badiou and Aristotle to say that we neither want to take the human being outside of this world, but at the other hand, we don't want to say that the human being can be reduced to just animal. Yeah. And I don't think that I don't know if there's anything that can be reduced to just its genus in that way.
Well, no, the reduction to the genus is definitely a good point. But the problem is, and this is something that would have to get played out, and I try to do it in a reading of Aristotle, in which that line that blurs between the human and the human animal and other animals is really much less definitive than I think the history of philosophy has thought. I mean, when Aristotle says that humans are the beings that has logos, it's having logos in a certain kind of way. It's not as if, you know, other animals in the world don't respond to the way to the logos that's operating in the cosmos. So, and in the world itself.
Or judge their world or make decisions about it based on their determination of what the situation before them is.
Right. So, I mean, there's a way in which the humans that humans have logos in a certain way that gives them the capacity to to organize their world and with regard to an end and all that stuff that maybe other animals don't have. But I just want to get back. That's a point for a larger discussion, which
sure.
we can have, and hopefully we'll have at some point. Because in some ways, that's part of what my book on Aristotle and the nature of truth is mm-hmm. trying to articulate. Mm-hmm. But the larger point that I wanted to sort of get at is why, you know, or what is going on with the normative judgment operating throughout Badiou, Rancière, Arendt, and the history of philosophy that is recognizing or that is articulating the animal, that animalistic dimension of the human as something negative that's to be avoided, that is a reduction of the essence, you know, so that there's a whole set of normative assumptions. Actually, I think Lee Johnson, in some ways, in her discussion we had about weak humanism, gets at some of this. I'd be interested to stage a kind of dialogue
yeah.
between the two of you. Obviously, I know you're friends, so that's great.
Right.
Because she wants to hold on to the vocabulary of rights for certain reasons.
Right.
And I think both of your projects are really interesting in that question of what, you know, do we give up rights? Do rights really involve a certain kind of substantialist conception of human being?
Yeah. Or not?
But that's getting off a little bit on for a second. So I just wanted to wonder a little bit about whether Badiou, whether the distinction between ontology and politics in Badiou is not just a repetition of Arendt's Zoe Bios distinction. And you're saying, what would you say to that?
So I don't think it is, because I don't think that there is one kind of being or one way of being that is held over to ontology and then the sort of better political kind of being as in the way that Arendt talks about it, the one that can bring forth glory
right.
in politics. Mm-hmm. Right. So for Badiou, it seems that the event that brings forth what is not discerned in ontology is what leads to the development of a subject who testifies to a truth. You get this whole account that really in some ways draws upon the great French thinkers of the 20th century. He's drawing on Sartre and Althusser mm-hmm. and others to make this account of how truth becomes something that we act out in the political world,
right.
not because we're leaving something behind, because it's not a matter of the question. I don't think is so much a matter of how we lived in ontology. It's not that we lived a certain way when we were only in ontology, right. as if it would be for Arendt when we were in the household. That ontology is this matter of the operation that is whereby we think being and how we can disrupt that. So the state too is working to maintain and somehow control and organize what is given.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not somehow what it's doing is economics there just, or that what it's doing is at the level of mere necessity. But that in its effort to totalize and control, something is left out, and the testifying to it is what leads to the political subject. So I think that you get different senses of what politics are and different senses of what precedes. So what's pre-evental looks very different than the household in the Arendtian sense. Now, that's not to say that I don't think Arendt is worth engaging in this project.
Mm-hmm.
I think that her notion of action is really productive here. And I think that she too is trying to think a politics that is not based on the sovereign. And I think Agamben has shown the ways that it's problematic if you're going to hold on to this Zoe Bios distinction to be able to do that. But I do think that her idea of action might be the site to think how we can get beyond sovereignty.
Well, yeah, I mean, one of the interesting things that one should think about is the manner in which actually her own account of action undercuts her distinction between the public and the private, and even one might say Zoe and Bios in that sense.
Right. Actually,
maybe I'll try and post. I had an article that I published on that question some years back, so I'll try and put a link to that in the blog for this.
Yeah, that'd be helpful.
So, but let me just return then, because it's becoming a little bit more clear now, I think, to me about. You yourself say that the relationship between ontology and the event is where Badiou situates politics. So,
right.
My original sort of way of thinking about this would then, resonate more with how I'm understanding your position with regard to Badiou, that. This is a question of, in some ways, a question of how we account for the event, or how the event, something about the event, remains always unaccountable and uncountable. Is that?
Yes, I do think so. There is the sense of the event is that which we become. Badiou uses the language of the event is that to which we become faithful to, mm-hmm. in the effort to make what we see appearing there appear. And that sense of what is happening then is this affirmation of the universality of the political situation, where something was not affirmed in the ontological situation. Right. So that Badiou calls the generic that part that its only property is that it belongs. It has no claim except that it belongs. And so he has this mantra of, if you're here, you belong, which is mm-hmm. something that he carries into his political work in France with the sans-papiers and the immigrant population. Right. That sense of, if you're here, you belong. And from my own work, living at the border,
yeah.
as I have for the last couple of years, this has become more and more, it resonates. Mm. In this sense of, people are as much a part of my political situation, whether they live on this side of the river or that side of the river, right. that being here is that belonging, and that we have very stringent operations of the state meant to totalize and count and operate on and control so that everything is maintained in a certain way. And yet, when you get these moments where you see, no, in fact, this is a universal situation. This is an entire community. It is not divided by these lines.
Well, I mean, that actually really brings me around to, you had mentioned earlier the relationship between Badiou and phenomenology, because if what you're saying in part is, you know, being here is enough, then
right.
the question of how we respond to what appears here among us, and that this is sort of the manner in which I've been thinking about the sort of ethical political dimensions of appearing,
right,
is about a certain ability to respond to things as they appear, which recognizes that whatever that response is going to be is going to is never going to be enough. Namely, there's always going to be a remainder. There's always going to be that which escapes. Your ability to respond, but that the response itself is still an attempt to get to do some justice to what's here, to use that language. So I'm wondering how you would situate Badiou with respect, and the event in particular, with respect to the issue of phenomenology, or the
well,
small
you may
question
know that
there.
You may know that that's a volatile question.
I don't
know.
Yeah, I set you up for the volatile question. I thought you were going to solve it for us here.
Oh, good. Well, I did say that Logics of Worlds is an attempt at a phenomenology. But I think that what Badiou means by that, he takes up category theory to think phenomenology. So it's a long way from Husserl. The reason that Badiou takes issue with phenomenology as it's practiced in the 20th century is that he's concerned with the way that the way that it thinks the subject and the way that it thinks truth and the way that truth is located in a particular way in the subject is the concern that leads him to think the subject at the point of the event where subject is formed as this performance in the effort to work out a truth. Mm-hmm. Now, what you were saying about the impossibility of ever being able to respond to every appearance, I think that Badu wants to show how the procedure that works out the truth can testify to the truth of the universality, for example, of politics, that everyone who is here belongs, without having that sense that I think ultimately Badu's concern is that phenomenology assumes a finitude of human beings, and that his whole project that works through both set theory and category theory is to try to show an infinitude. And in that sense, this empowering, rather than the sense of we are always limited, we are always recognizing this incapacity to recognize and to examine what is there,
right.
That Badu wants to say, no, that philosophy starts from the assumption that what is can be thought.
Right. Well, this is actually... I'm going to have to do some more work, that means, on Badu, because part of the point that I'm trying to argue in my reading of Aristotle in this book that's coming out on truth is to hold on to both sides. That is to say, to recognize that every attempt to respond to the appearing of things is itself conditioned by the finitude of human response, the human ability to respond.
Right.
But it is also, in good Greek, you know, naturalistic fashion, getting at something of the truth of what appears. So that, I mean, I think the overemphasis on the remainder that escapes our understanding or our ability to articulate is overemphasized. And what we need to recognize is, without denying that, there's still also the possibility of relation that emerges when you are able to articulate something according to the way it shows itself. And so we don't miss the doorway completely, to use the vocabulary that Aristotle sometimes uses with regard to truth in the metaphysics that he does use. But we say something. Not that we have it completely. So it's the delusion of a total understanding that we want to resist, but it's also the delusion of, you know, the impossibility of understanding that we want to resist. But that's more me than Badia.
Yeah, no, I do think that the question that you're getting at is the question of, what is truth, and why do we take this idea of truth over that idea of truth?
Mm-hmm.
So I think Aristotle gives us a certain idea of truth that has to do with the appearance of things, the manifestation of things, that for Badu, he thinks that means that what philosophy and what truth is doing is interpreting the world to some extent, and that he, following Althusser, following Marx, wants to reject the notion that truth is interpretation and wants to say instead that it is this working through a subject.
Right. Well, I mean, I guess I would want to just shift the vocabulary a little bit from interpretation, although I might, under certain conditions, accept that if we have the right notion of hermeneutics. But the point that the vocabulary that I want to use is the notion of truth as co-responsibility, that the ability to respond together with the thing that shows itself, and that's where truth happens, between that which attempts to articulate what something is and the expression of the thing itself.
Now, I think that it's important for Badu that that event happens in a situation, and because of that, I do think it's possible to bring together, to some extent, the evental world and the ontological world, mm-hmm. that there is this relationship, therefore, between the world of truth and the world of how we speak about what is. Right. So, as you know, I'm very committed to Aristotle. Part of my work in trying to figure out the Badouian project, which I am excited about, is to think about the ways that it may or may not be in line with or compatible with Aristotle. Right. I think when it comes to the logic, it's incompatible. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that that's true with the level of its of Aristotle's politics.
Well, I mean, I think, and this is part of probably a discussion we can have on another digital dialogue, which is, you know, if we give a reading of Aristotle, as I would like to do, as both a naturalist, not in any reductive sense of naturalist, not as a materialist in that sense, but as a naturalist, by that I mean as somebody who recognizes that human being is part of natural being, that we mm-hmm. That we have the ability to respond to the natural world in which we are, in which we live, in ways that get at and do justice to the world in which we live, but as not only a naturalist but as a phenomenologist, so as a phenomenological naturalist, then if we can read Aristotle that way, you can. We can perhaps avoid some of the ways in which his thinking has been caricatured over the course of of the 2,000 years or so since he wrote. So, I mean, I do think there's an interesting dialogue to stage here between a dynamic understanding of Aristotle and some of the concerns that Badiou articulates and that you so nicely articulate in this paper. And I'm really glad that you came to the Digital Dialogue to talk about it with me.
Thanks. I think that the idea of phenomenology and its attempt to be able to speak something new is where there might be avenues into this relationship between contemporary people like Deleuze and Badiou.
Which brings us also back to Arendt and the whole question of action as the beginning of something.
Yeah, different. Precisely.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Adriel. This has been a great discussion, and
thank you.
I look forward to hearing what you had to say on the Facebook page and to a continuing discussion as the digital dialogue goes on. I really appreciate your support.
Thanks for inviting me on, Chris.
The Digital Dialogue is produced under a Creative Commons non-commercial share-alike license. To download or subscribe to The Digital Dialogue, visit iTunes U at the Apple iTunes Store and search on Digital Dialogue. You will find it under the Pennsylvania State University area of the iTunes Store. You may also visit my website, The Long Road, at www.personal.psu.edu/cpl2. Or you can join us on Facebook by becoming a fan of The Digital Dialogue on our Facebook page. Just search Facebook for The Digital Dialogue. This has been The Digital Dialogue.